that, Tom Goldtooth of Indigenous Environmental Network and Isabella Zizi of Idle No More. That does it for our week of broadcasting from here. A special thanks to our crew here in Bonn.
Sean Russell, and I'm working with AP, and I do the lighting and cameras.
Hi, I'm Jenny. I've been doing sound.
Hi, I'm Kiri from AP in London.
Hi there, I'm Julian Jones.
David Pentlow from near Oxford.
I am Sheila Nicol-Kesad.
Zoran Jankovic.
My name's Callum Skidworth.
I'll be speaking in Berlin on Saturday night at 7:30 p.m. at the Festsaal Kreuzberg. Check our website. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, Gusdor Namiche, Carla Wills, Laura Gattis-Diener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Masri, Tarina Nadura. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 7:59. Coming up next is Positively Revolting with Linda and Lynn talking to Matthew Ho about the new Peace and Common Dreams about the legal case against Sergeant Bowie Bergdahl, who walked away from his military base in Afghanistan.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Hats for the Homeless donation drive. From December 1st through the 15th, five Southeast locations will collect clean, new, or gently used hats, scarves, and gloves, and the folks at Zippity News will distribute them to local shelters. Dropbox locations and more information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
And good morning. Good morning, Portland and beyond. You're listening to KBOO in Portland. This is Positively Revolting. I'm Lynn. I am here this morning with Linda Olsen-Osterlin.
Good morning.
Our beloved sub-co-host who's here. Ani's still going to be in Mexico for a couple weeks, but she will be back. And boy, what a time. What a time we're in. This morning, we are going to be speaking with Matthew Ho, who is a member of the Advisory Board of Expose Facts, Veterans for Peace, and World Beyond War. In 2009, he resigned his position with the State Department in Afghanistan in protest of the escalation of the Afghan war by the Obama administration. You remember them. He previously had been in Iraq with a State Department team with the U.S. Marines, and he's a senior fellow with the Center for International Policy. Good morning, Matthew.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, no, thanks for being on again. Boy, this story, you know, at KBOO, we are here to help report what is passed by. And this whole thing with Bowie Bergdahl has just been a complete travesty. It has been completely shoved under the rug. Do you want to tell us the story of the poor guy?
Yeah, sure. And I appreciate you guys having this forum because it's really his story, Bo's story, really is a good explanation for America's wars as well as our society in general. Bowie Bergdahl is from Idaho. In about 2005 or so, he tries to enlist in the Coast Guard, or he's successful in enlisting in the Coast Guard. But after a short period of time, maybe a couple months, he is just discharged from the Coast Guard for mental health reasons. A couple years later, he enlists successfully in the Army, and is put into the infantry, particularly light infantry, and actually training to be a paratrooper. And he is sent to Afghanistan, despite the fact that the Coast Guard had discharged him for mental health reasons, despite the fact that he should not have been allowed to enlist in the Army because of those reasons. And then throughout the process, his training process, as he goes from one training command to another and ultimately arrives at his unit and sent to Afghanistan, there is just continual supervision of him that should have noticed he had mental health issues. There's a complete breakdown in responsibility, as well as, again, this waiver of the Army to allow people to enlist and then send them to war, who should not be allowed to do so because of mental health reasons. But he's in Afghanistan. He's in the eastern part of Afghanistan in a violent place where the insurgency is active. And he decides that his unit is having problems. And there's actually a significant amount of anecdotal evidence, as well as from what we know from the Army, that conducted investigations after Bo Bergdahl was captured, that unit did have a lot of leadership issues. But he decides that he's going to walk off his base in eastern Afghanistan and walk to the nearest large base, which is about 15 or 20 miles away, through Taliban-held territory, in order to report his concerns to a colonel or a general or someone who is senior. And this is in late spring, early summer of 2009. He's not gone for more than a couple hours when he is captured by the Taliban and quickly transported to Pakistan. Within a couple of days, he's in Pakistan, which is something that the Army and our intelligence services know right away. And for 5 years, or nearly 5 years, he is held in brutal captivity in amazingly awful conditions. He tries to escape a number of times. At one point, he escapes for 9 or 10 days, and each time he's recaptured and beaten severely, tortured. The last 3 years of that nearly 5 year time in captivity, he is held in an iron cage, basically, with his toilet right beneath him. He suffers from dysentery, as well, again, the beatings, the torture, being chained, confined, malnourished, etc. After his release...
Matthew, can I ask you a question
sure.
In here? This is Linda. I wanted to ask you, do we have any knowledge of what his what the psychological issues or mental health issues were that he got out of the Coast Guard for?
He was discharged, as far as what I understand, is that he's discharged from the Coast Guard under... So when you go into the military, one of the things the military has is this administrative separation process, which basically allows people to be discharged from the military, from whatever branch, for reasons that are just general in nature. This person's not a good fit. This person can't adhere to the standards. You know, there's issues. And so he's administratively separated or generally discharged. But what it's for, if you look into the notes, it is for mental health. And later on, an Army investigative a medical investigative team, after he's released, determines that he has issues of post-traumatic stress dating from his childhood, as well as what they call schizophysical disorder, which is a type of psychiatric disorder where he is unable to ascertain reality. And this is why later on,
because we were reading, Linda and I were Wikipedia-ing some things this morning before the show, and Linda was, and we're looking at the last email he made to us. He sounds really sane.
Last email he sent to his father is really moving, actually.
It's very moving. He sounds very sane, and which I know makes you crazy in the Army.
That's exactly right. You get into the whole, right? You get into the whole Yozarian and catch 22, right? I mean, that's the whole thing. Only a certain sane person will want to get out of the war, but you have to be insane to get out of the war, you know, under the military guidelines. And but if you're insane, you want to stay in the war. I mean, that whole kind of catch 22 thing. But yes. So, but what you see it is he believes that he's a, in his own words, a Jason Bourne type character, referring to the Matt Damon action spy hero film series. And he believes he's much greater and capable than he is. Again, he believes that he can walk 15 to 20 miles through the Afghan wilderness, through the mountains. So
that's
there
a tad delusional,
aspects. Yeah, that type of delusional. But also, too, but as you said, and I'm glad you brought it up, because all this stuff is available. There's a very good article from several years ago by the late Michael Hastings, as well as Matt Farwell, in Rolling Stone about Bo Bergdahl. This was they had written this fairly long piece about him while he was still in captivity, and it was published a couple of years prior to his being released. But yeah, he does. He's got these mental health issues where he suffers from, for lack of a better term, delusions or delusions of grandeur, or he thinks he's. But also too, some of the things he talks about wanting to become a ninja or an assassin, or feeling that he could fight the war better on his own than if he's with his unit. So he has these, but as you say though too, he sees very clearly in his eye, through his own eyes, that what's going on there is not right, that his unit is having problems, that the war is not being won.
And when he was talking about being that honesty is completely shot. You are not supposed to be honest. You're cut down for being honest, he said. If you're a conceited brown noser, it's fine. You can do whatever you want, and you'll be handed your higher rank.
He also said how embarrassed he was about the way that all his fellow soldiers talked about Afghans and looked on Afghans. And so he isolated himself from his fellow soldiers because they would make fun of people and say they were less than a real civilization because they didn't necessarily have wood floors, things like that. Some of the same kinds of ways that I heard Vietnam members come back from Vietnam and talk about the Vietnamese people as animals. So he was separating himself from that attitude towards the Afghan people as well.
Yeah, and one of the things you see in some of his writings and his emails is this, and I think this is where you see this split in his personality, if I'm using the right terminology for it, where he speaks in that way, in that regard towards the Afghans. But then you'll see in other writings of his where he talks about we need to be kicking more doors down, we need to be more hard on these people, we need to be more vicious, we need to be, fighting this war in a less merciful way. So there are times when he does have the regard for the Afghans that is so different than what the military and what warfare wants of people. But at other times you see him wanting to be this super soldier and to wage his own personal war to win the war. So there is this, within his writings, his emails, there is this kind of back and forth that occurs. But certainly what you do point out about his feelings towards his soldiers and his command are confirmed by the army investigations that occur after he gets captured, and several officers and non-commissioned officers in his unit are relieved. You also see it too, where how quickly after he is released, and the press, particularly Fox News, egged on by the politics of it, have on his former platoon mates, and how quickly and how vehemently they're utilized by both the press, by Fox News and right-wing radio, as well as by Republican politicians and Republican political operators.
And Trump, the ruler.
I'm sorry?
Trump, the ruler, also had negative things to say.
Of course, so you see this, and so you see like that what he was saying about his platoon mates and what he was saying about his superiors turns out actually to be true. There were a large number of problems in that unit, and that was confirmed by the Army investigation and then by the subsequent relief of officers and non-commissioned officers of their roles and duties in the days and weeks and months following his capture.
I just want to let people know that you're listening to Positively Revolting on KABU Radio. I'm Lynn. I'm here with Linda. It's the L's word today. Anyway, and we are speaking this morning with Matthew Ho, who has written an article, and we're talking about Bo Bergdahl.
That's right. Bo Bergdahl.
Bo Bergdahl, who was the scapegoat of all scapegoats by the military and has recently pleaded guilty to some heinous things, and we're here to kind of discuss that and unwrap the insanity around, if you will, around what's been going on. But we would also love to hear your calls. If you have questions for Matthew, the number is 503-231-8187. We are also on Facebook at Positively Revolting, and the Twitter sphere at Positively Revolt, or if you want to talk to us on Gmail, positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. Matthew, what to do about this? I mean,
well, let him finish the story. You know, interrupted him in the story. He was just to say what happened to Bergdahl when he got released. You know,
So in 2014, right before the 5-year mark of his capture, he's released. He's released in a deal that's brokered between the U.S. government and the Taliban. We release 5 detainees from Guantanamo, and we get Bergdahl back. At first, the response to this is positive. And it should be noted that prior to his release and prior to an event that occurs after his release, the support from the Republican establishment, from veterans groups, conservative audiences, in the blogosphere and on Facebook and on Twitter, was highly supportive of getting Bo Bergdahl back, of doing anything possible to get him back. You have those statements from people like John McCain. You have them throughout Facebook support groups. You have various veterans motorcycle groups that hold rallies in support of him. But then what occurs after he's released is his path, and this is really the defining feature of so much of what has occurred over the last few years with Bo and with this whole story and a larger symptomatic and emblematic of our society, is his parents, Bob and Jenny Bergdahl, go and stand with President Obama in the Rose Garden as the president announces his release. As soon as those pictures occur, as soon as that video occurs of Bob and Jenny standing with President Obama, the shift in attitude towards Bergdahl changes nearly immediately. And what you see have now is you have this incredibly partisan political fight occur over Bo Bergdahl, because for, as in my opinion, is for the simple fact that Bob and Jenny, who are a white couple, have the temerity to stand with the black president in the Rose Garden, and this ties now into a whole cycle of that Obama, President Obama, was not a true American, was not a real American, that he's a Muslim. And they are then tied into that. And this is just one more article and one more screed against President Obama that ties into all the fantasies about him, you know, having a doctored birth certificate and being born in Kenya and all that nonsense. But Bo Bergdahl now takes center stage in this latest attack on President Obama. And those years of his captivity, those years of his torture, the continued support for his release and his being freed by the U.S. military through whatever means possible by Republican politicians just evaporates nearly overnight, or literally not even before the night happened, I believe.
It reminds me of the sexual harassment and abuse things that are that happen. That immediately, the victim is the because they tried to make it seem as though he wanted to be with the Taliban, right?
Oh, absolutely. And what you have occurred, just one after another, quicker than anyone can react to it is, one, you have a Republican political outfit, which is headed by a man named Richard Grenell, immediately gets involved with Fox News and immediately has on air his fellow platoon mates who are denouncing him as a traitor, as having collaborated with the Taliban, that he left a note saying such, that he took his weapons. All these things that are completely untrue, completely false, are blasted out through Fox News and then through right-wing talk radio, and then, of course, repeated through Twitter and Facebook and everything else, that Bergdahl was a traitor. And then, of course, then by extension, President Obama is a traitor and disloyal and everything else. And this goes along with, ties into all the Benghazi things. I mean, all these other issues that the right wing loves to go after Obama about. But what they're doing here is they're demonizing this young man who just was freed after 5 years of incredibly horrible captivity. During the follow-on, as this goes to court martial, as it's in its pre-trial stages, the man who is the lead or the head of prisoner of war expert for the Pentagon says that no one has been treated in the way that Bo Bergdahl was treated, in terms of how horrifically he was treated, how nightmarishly he was treated since the Vietnam War, that he has suffered more than any American prisoner of war has since then. And this is completely disregarded. The lies about Bergdahl become just legion, including that he got soldiers killed. So this is where it gets really sick and depraved, because as the right wing spreads these lies about Bergdahl having his captivity caused American soldiers to be killed looking for them, you're now bringing in other families of dead Americans who are now being told your son was killed because of Bergdahl, which is a complete and utter lie. And we know this from the Army's own reports. If you don't believe me, you can go to the website for the podcast Serial. They actually have the mission reports for where they claim six American soldiers were killed looking for Bergdahl. You can actually see on the Serial podcast website the various mission reports for those six soldiers that were killed. And you can see in the Army's own reports from the time that they were killed that they were not looking for Bergdahl. And so these lies continue, and he becomes, again, demonized. He becomes associated with being un-American, with being a traitor. And then he is the reason why we're losing this war, because of people like him and because of people like his parents and like Obama, who are not real Americans. This is why we're losing the war. And so rather than holding to account the generals and the politicians who have created this war, fostered this war, sustained this war, accelerated this war, we hold to account a young man and his family for the failures of our nation in an incredibly immoral, counterproductive, unwinnable war, rather than holding to account the people who are sustaining the war, the people who are accelerating the war, right? The people who have created this war, the politicians and the generals.
Well, and it was like everything he talked about in the military came down upon him. You know?
Yes, correct. And again, so much was said about him that was untrue. So many lies were said about him and fostered and are still fostered. And you will see continue to be repeated over and over again. Fox News is especially atrocious about this. The commentators they have come on the air to talk about Bo Bergdahl will still say to this day, even though it's been debunked for years now, that men were killed looking for Bergdahl. Even though we knew that.
Well, Fox News, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But that's where so much of the and it continues also on right wing radio with the Rush Limbaughs and the Sean Hannitys, or in the op-ed pages, but what that does is that continues the anger and the vehemence towards him. And this young man who occurs is after 3.5 years of being home, after his family was promised by the military, by the generals, including people like then General Mattis, now Secretary Mattis, that once we get your son back, he's going to be, you know, he's going to be returned to you. This is not, he's not going to go through any type of trial or anything. This is what the Bergdahls are told. And of course, when he comes home and this political fracas begins, you see where the real courage and the real loyalty of America's generals lies. None of them, you know, especially Jim Mattis, who's now Secretary of Defense, say anything or do anything to stop this scapegoating, this demonization. And he goes to court martial, even though the investigating officers, the lieutenant colonels, up to the generals who look into the matter after he's been free, recommend no punishment, recommend that let this young man go. But the most senior general overrides that decision and sends him to court martial. And in the last month or so, as the court martial process was going on and as the trial was finally about to begin, Bo Bergdahl pleads guilty because he feels that, according to him, and from what we understand, he feels he could not receive a fair trial, as well as he wants to accept his guilt and move on with his life, and throws himself on the mercy of the court.
Where did he think that the mercy of the court?
And what they had done, they had opted for a trial by judge as opposed to a trial by jury because they felt, the defense felt that they could not receive a fair trial because things have been poisoned and tainted so much, particularly by you see John McCain weighing heavily in this because as he's not the chair of the Senate Armed Services Committee, but he is, you know, basically second in that position and has a huge say in military matters. John McCain says, if Bo Bergdahl isn't punished, I'm going to hold hearings and hold the generals accountable for why he wasn't punished. And of course, as we know, Donald Trump on the campaign trail speaks about Bo Bergdahl a number of times. And ties into this whole, he ties Bergdahl into this whole "Make America Great Again" trope. Into that, in the old days, we would have shot the guy like this. Well, you know what? The U.S. Army hasn't executed anyone for desertion since World War II, and in that case,
really, a lie came out of Trump's lips. You're kidding me?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, poisoning the pool, and I think that's exactly what you're getting to, Matthew. This is Linda. Is that really, you know, when you think that a jury pool is going to be poisoned because people have heard too much about a case and prejudicial information, you try to get a change of venue. But there's no such thing that could be affected in this case. And certainly, you know, presidents with ethics do not weigh in on issues like this. They understand the influence they have and that it's inappropriate to use against somebody who's facing court. But all of those kinds of ethics have gone out the window completely in recent years.
Correct. And even more so in the military, you have this concept of undue command influence, where because you have a chain of command, because people are in a military hierarchy, if a superior says something, that can be undue command influence because the people who are on the jury, the judge in the case, the prosecutors or the defense counsel, who are all military officers, feel that they have an obligation to listen to their superior, or they feel that they have, if they don't do so, they'll be punished in some way. So the defense counsel argues a number of times that there's undue command influence. That is overruled, although the judge, man named Colonel Nance, does say, hey, look, I'm retiring in a year. It doesn't matter to me what these people say. But they do. They go to a judge, rather than having a jury trial, they have a judge trial. And then, as I said, Bo Bergdahl pleads guilty. He is not sentenced to prison. He was looking at the prosecution wanted 14 years. Again, the colonels and the generals who ran the investigations, who did all the investigations after he was released, all recommended no punishment, but the prosecution wanted 14 years. The judge gives him no time in prison, but does give him a dishonorable discharge, as well as a number of pretty heavy fines. But what we have with this, here comes another problem with this and shows another aspect of American society in these wars and what we're doing not just to people abroad, but to the people that were having fight these wars, with that dishonorable discharge, and with everything we knew about his prior mental health conditions, and now after 5 years of incredibly awful torture and suffering while in captivity, he will not be eligible for Veterans Administration health care. So basically, you take this young man, you send him someplace he never should have been. He should never should have been allowed in the Army. You send him to the front lines. He does something stupid, which probably could have been predicted. He is captured, tortured for 5 years. He comes home. He's tortured again, relentlessly through the media and through politicians. He has death threats. He has to walk around with bodyguards. He goes through this trial process. He pleads guilty, and they kick him out of the Army. And, you know, good luck. Best of luck to you. I hope you don't put a gun in your mouth and blow your head off, but we're not going to do anything to help you out from here on.
And we're certainly not going to do anything to stop you from putting a gun into your mouth.
And that is something that we have seen over and over again in the military for forever, basically. It's finally starting to be addressed now. But these young men and women who go to war, or who are sexually assaulted or experience some type of trauma while in the military.
And how could you not?
And then they turn to drugs or alcohol, or they have issues, or they end up deserting or doing something because of that trauma. They are dishonorably discharged, or they receive a bad conduct discharge, and that limits them or negates them to receiving health care from the VA, which all veterans are entitled to if you have an honorable discharge. And so it's just another example in this story of the larger issue of American society, of American of the American wars, and what we do to people as these wars churn on, both the millions of people that we've killed overseas and left homeless from the wars, as well as too the millions of Americans who have served in these wars, often thinking they're going to do the right thing, that they're going to fight some great evil, and then so often finding out that no, there is no great evil, and the real evil is our occupation. So over and over again, we see in this story this is a very symbolic or a terrific example of the great and larger problems we have, not just in our foreign policy, but in how we take care of people here at home.
Understatement of the year, indeed. Well, we've got a couple callers on the line, Matthew. So, Sean.
Good morning, you guys.
Good morning.
Hey, so this whole talk of, you know, it's just an overall sad story and not surprising in terms of how they're dealing with it. But it ties perfectly right into a couple of current things that have a lot to do with media, and especially Fox. And that is that if anybody even pays attention, if they ever see Fox or watch any football and so forth, but I happen to watch the football game on last night, and this isn't about football but about the media, is how much Fox and the military work together to promote militarism by how much they advertise on Fox. And also, like, for instance, last night on the specifically the football network, is even though Veterans Day was last week, that specifically the coaches of each team are wearing fatigue type clothing instead of their usual team clothing, with khaki clothing and USA and flags on their patches on their shoulders and so forth. So there's the whole promotion of military that's been going on, but specifically the Fox working with the military to promote it in that way. But overall, the whole idea that the truth is the first casualty of war, but now it's of the media, because also how the courts actually found in favor of Fox that they were not obligated to actually have to tell the truth when they were reporting.
Yeah, pretty despicable. You know, the other part of media, this is Linda speaking, the other part of media that I think is really doing this is all the different TV shows, all the different dramas about special forces of one sort or another going to Afghanistan, and it's always to save some poor this or this person or that person, and it's always heroic. They always have good aims in mind, and we're just inundated on regular TV with military shows and calling them heroes on every occasion, and make, you know, really aggrandizing the efforts of the military, and I think leaving a lot of people with a really not very honest view of who is in our military, because for my whole life through the Vietnam War and now, who's in the military are regular people, and there's a lot of them that get damaged and are do bad things.
Right, and you know, as you know, most of the people in the military, it's a very conservative so-called community. But you know, like the symbolism, like last night in the football game, is that only the coaches are wearing these military-type uniforms. And, of course, you know, football is thought of as being a war type of game.
Well,
and
while the players are taking the knee, what a way to go against the players.
Yeah, and only the coaches are wearing it because they're kind of the leaders. So the power, the symbolism of that. But I just want to finish that also the other day, and I want to recommend it if nobody's ever heard of it. There's a great documentary that this gal made because she saw this incredible change in her father when he started watching Fox News on a regular basis, and she came to discover all these different people around the country who had seen the same thing with family members and so forth, and how overall the power of media, but the power of Fox, turning people into these very aggressive people, switching their political viewpoints and so forth. But it's called The Brainwashing of My Dad, and it really brings up a lot of these points of how easily people are swayed by this constant barrage of lies that Fox puts on the news. Anyway, thanks for the show and talking about Bo Bergdahl, because I've learned a lot of new things I didn't know before.
Great. Thank you, Sean. Did you have a comment on that, Matthew?
Oh, I think Sean is absolutely spot on. You have this interrelation between the media and the Pentagon or our war culture. I mean, I tend to say that the state religion of this country is militarism, you know, and it always has been. And this ties into, you know, in that piece I wrote about Bo Bergdahl, you know, I titled it Traitor to American Exceptionalism and White Supremacy. And this ties into the larger theme of Manifest Destiny, of the Doctrine of Discovery, which was the... people are unfamiliar with that. That was the papal bull that basically was established several centuries ago, immediately after Columbus's quote discovery unquote of America, and you see this tying in of Christianity and whiteness, which really isn't a concept, right? Whiteness doesn't really exist, right? Until we have to interact with other people who aren't white. But into this American, which then becomes Manifest Destiny, which then becomes this American exceptionalism.
One of the best PR campaigns ever done, American exceptionalism. It is,
yeah.
I mean, it was the most effective propaganda thing I think I've ever witnessed before. And I remember being, realizing that it wasn't true at one point. And it's done more harm to us than many, many things, I think.
Oh, and it goes throughout.
Let alone the other people in the world.
I'm not sure who it was who just said it, if it was Lynn or Linda, about the number of special forces-type television shows that go on. And so it's just not the Fox News. It's also, too, of course, the CNN and MSNBC. Let's not forget MSNBC fired Phil Donahue in 2003 because he wasn't praising the war enough, right?
You know
what I mean? Like, as well, then, too, and if you look, you can see even yesterday, CNBC, the business channel, runs a story on how great Raytheon is and how their missiles are going to save the South Koreans from the North Korean nuclear onslaught. So it's just not in Fox, but the other major networks as well, too, of course, than the press, the written press does this. But you see it also, too, in our entertainment. As you just said about the special forces stuff, I mean, the interaction between Hollywood and the Pentagon and Hollywood and the CIA is something that is not discussed enough. The funding, the way the Pentagon subsidizes Hollywood films, for example, the estimate is in the movie Captain Phillips, the Tom Hanks film that came out several years ago about how the Navy SEALs rescued Captain Phillips from the Somali pirates. The estimate is that the Hollywood studio saved about $50 million by utilizing Navy ships and aircraft and sailors, because this way they don't have to use the computer generated effects, which are incredibly expensive, or rent their own ships, or because they use sailors, they don't have to pay labor.
So they got them
the
for free?
Rate of wage.
They got them for free?
They get them at a very reduced rate.
Oh, a reduced rate on sale.
A very reduced rate. And what that comes at, though, and what you're getting, though, what the Pentagon gets in return for that, is final script approval. And the CIA does as well. They have final script approval. And that means, and when it says final script approval, it means final script approval. Nothing happens in that movie that the Pentagon doesn't approve of. And so when you're talking about so much money being involved, that means that's why we haven't seen many counter-narrative films or stories coming out of the big studios, because if you're able to save $50 million on a film, you're not going to do anything to jeopardize your relationship with the Pentagon. So even then, it may not be Captain Phillips. It could just be any film is not going to show a soldier or American service member in a good light. You're not going to show them doing anything criminally wrong in these TV shows about the SEALs or Delta Force or whatever they have. Occasionally, a civilian will get killed, but it's always an honest and tragic mistake, or it's because they were being used as a human shield by the bad guys. And it's always a very Manichaean good versus evil construct. It goes back to a very simple religious type a story of good versus evil. And this ties back into, as we were just discussing, Manifest Destiny, American Exceptionalism, the Doctrine of Discovery, which you take these tropes and you take these narratives and you put them into practice. And that is not just why we're able to have these wars overseas continually and expanding wars overseas that have left, you know, between 1 million and 1.5 million people dead since 2001. But also, too, it's why on our domestic policies, we're so inclined to support violence-based solutions. It's no coincidence that the wars we've been engaged with for the last 15, 16 years have killed 1.5 million people, and we have the world's largest prison population. You know, I mean, it's two sides of the same coin. And why is this violence allowed? And why is this violence
it's profitable. That's why
agreeable?
It's allowed. That's what I think.
I'm sorry?
It's profitable.
It's profitable, absolutely profitable. But among in our culture, though, because you're basically, if you have this construct of good versus evil, if you have this construct of white versus black or light versus
it's
darkness,
so simple.
It's so simple. Yeah, and so violence is allowed because the violence is being used to achieve good aims.
Right.
Matthew, can you cover one? Oh,
first let's go to Jim first.
He's we have a caller.
Yes, he's been holding for a while, so I'd like to get him on the line.
Welcome, Jim.
Good morning.
Good morning.
If I may, I'd like to offer a measure of perspective here regarding not only Bergdahl's situation, but that of others in general. This entire war and state of perpetual war is based on lies perpetrated by neocon elements of the Bush administration, the Project for a New American Century, and the Republican Party, with the collusion of the Democrats, not to mention the false flag elements of the inside job on September 11th, 2001. Get real.
I don't think we're disagreeing with you.
I think I do agree with you, as a matter of fact.
I have the guts to carry on a real discussion of the state of our nation and the effects on the rest of humanity.
Okay, well, thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
Thank you
Goodbye.
For your comment.
And Matthew, what I wanted to ask you about and what I wanted to see if you could go back and talk about a little bit was you talked about how when Bergdahl's family stood with Obama after the announcement of the release, that there was a big outburst of racist response. Can you talk about that and what you saw? Because that's part of the propaganda, too. And many of us didn't see that exactly if we're not looking at the same sources that you were looking at.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. It's immediate, and the reaction is visceral. It's that emotive quality, and this goes back to just speaking about the culture that we have, and about the arraying of this religious type of mindset towards our militarism. But yes, as soon as Bob and Janney, Bo Bergdahl's parents, stand in the Rose Garden with President Obama, the response is swift and immediate, and you start seeing, again, the similar types of accusations hurled not just towards President Obama, but towards the Bergdahl family, that they're not American. Bo's father had grown a beard and had been studying the Pashto language. He'd been studying the region. He actually was at such a wit's end, part of the purpose of growing that beard was for him to go to Pakistan and offer to trade himself for his son.
I can only imagine the anguish he was feeling.
That, you know, I'm a friend of the family, and I have been for a number of years before he was released. And I actually had dinner with Bob and Janney the evening, two evenings before Bo was released, and they had no idea this was going to occur. And I've, you know, because of my time in the wars, I've been to a lot of funerals of young men, and I've seen the look in the face of mothers who are burying their sons. But I had never seen the look that I saw, or what I saw in Janney's eyes that night, of a woman whose son was being held captive 7,000 miles away, who she knew was being tortured, who she didn't know if she would ever see again. I've never seen that kind of pain before and suffering in anyone's eyes like I saw that night. But you have this complete attack against them. No compassion, no understanding. Again, on the right-wing radio, on the Fox News, in the right-wing, the Daily Caller, those types of places, you have that they are traitors, that they are un-Americans, all the same type of language that is used against President Obama when they're talking about Benghazi, or they're talking about his birth certificate, or whatever it is they're talking about. And the other part of this is that, and you still see it being referred to, I can't recall if it was the New York Post or Daily News I looked at when Bo pleaded guilty. But again, it's brought up in the editorial page. Just as important or given much prominence is President Obama's role in this, how President Obama traded away five bloodthirsty terrorists in order to get back Bo Bergdahl, how he's willing to help the enemy out to get a traitor like him back is basically what's being said. And that is repeated over and over and over again. And the Republican political establishment, of course, keys on this. And you have Republican politicians, including John McCain, who come out so forcefully against Bo Bergdahl, saying he should never have been taken back, he should never have been rescued, who just literally in the weeks and months prior to his release were demanding that the Obama administration do more or do everything possible to rescue this young man. But you do. You see these elements that Bo Bergdahl is a traitor, and his parents, because his parents stand with the black president, is a traitor to their race, is a traitor to the American people. And as well then too, of course, it's a traitor to American exceptionalism, because if we had true Americans doing this, if true Americans were actually fighting, if true Americans were leading us, then we would have our God-given place in the world not being so well challenged. In these wars, we would be winning these wars.
Horrifying
notion. It's a really sad and awful story, and it plays out, and it's continuing to play out as we see what will occur with Bo Bergdahl as the life goes forward. Again, without the medical and mental health support he should be receiving.
Right. Well, I want to get to one more caller, but first I want to let folks know what's coming up this morning on KABU. At 9, Veterans Voice Radio deals with the human costs of war. Well, the theme continues. At 10 on Valley News, a look at the long-proven method of growing crops with little or no irrigation, known as dry farming. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, the St. James Show talks to visual artist and florist Maurice Harris about his journey through the worlds of fashion, art, and design. KABU is your independent source for news and entertainment. Become a member. Just go to kboo.fm and click on donate. It's easy. apparently we don't have another caller, but we still have Matthew on the line.
Yay.
So,
I'm going to ask you a question.
I'm sorry,
because you got
speechless.
To know the Bergdahl family. How do you think Bo is going to do with him and his parents? I mean, obviously, he has loving parents who've gone to great lengths to support their son and to get their son back. And, you know, growing a beard so that you could replace your son there, it's such a parent thing. It makes you want to cry as a parent. You're like, yes, I can understand that. How do you think he's going to do in the next few months and year with his family? And is his family supported in the community they come out of?
They live in a small the town in Idaho, and Bob, his father, the family was well known, or at least Bob was well known, because he's a UPS delivery man.
And so you got to know him.
Right? The people in the community knew him, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The guy who comes, right? Yeah, so and it's a small Idaho town, so there has been that support there, particularly the people who have, my understanding is within the community, any of the folks who were anti-Bo Bergdahl at the beginning of his release, so 3 years ago, after 2014, when all these charges that he had taken his rifle with him and helped the Taliban attack Americans and had gotten Americans killed, all these things that were complete lies, as they've been so invested in this that they've been paying attention and they know that those are lies. However, his name and the relationship to it, and the fact that you even see just this past week, 100 members of Congress have said that Bo Bergdahl should forfeit his back pay. The $300,000 that built up in his bank account while he was 5 years in captivity, plus if you're a prisoner of war, you receive additional compensation from the American government. Which I think is about $150,000. So I think he has about $300,000 in back pay. There's 100 members of Congress who want him to have to forfeit that because he was a traitor, because he was a deserter. Again, continuing to harp on these things and continuing to use it for a political advantage, and absolutely no sign of compassion, no sign of forgiveness, a continual scapegoat. As much as I want to be positive and optimistic for him and his family, and as someone myself who is a veteran of the wars and who has, I deal with my own mental health issues from the wars. I have a traumatic brain injury. There are things that I struggle with. I know how hard of a road this is going to be for anyone. But then to have been captured like that, tortured like that, kept in captivity, and then to face this torture and this treatment for the last 3.5 years, it's going to be a very difficult process. But the family has told me there are other avenues for him to receive his health care, and they are, I think they're just generally happy that he will not be serving any more prison time, and that at least this stage of this national embarrassment, that this is really aspect of American society and history is finally over.
Right.
It reminds me very much of my brother was in the military. He was drafted in the Vietnam War and chose to go ahead and obey that draft notice. And in the first 2 weeks he was up at Fort Lewis, he discovered that the military worked really hard to turn you against each other and to have a scapegoat. There was one guy who kind of messed up a bunch, and the second week they told everybody in my brother's group, the reason you don't get to go is because of this, effing problem.
Sure.
He's no good. And somewhere then later that night, there becomes what was called a blanket party, where they throw a blanket over the man and beat him. And my brother found himself wanting to participate in that because he really wanted that day off. And he realized what had happened to him in as shortly as 2 weeks, that he had turned into a different person than he would ever be. And that made him be able to survive the military by not being the military's man. He resisted it throughout the rest of his time. But I think this is exactly the same thing. We look for a scapegoat to, you know, so we can focus all of our attention on how bad that is instead of what the mission is itself, which is to dominate the world with violence. I mean, that's our military.
That's exactly right. And it goes back again to their willingness to utilize the families of six dead American soldiers and blame Bergdahl for their deaths. When that is not true, that's completely untrue. So there's not even a, they're willing to utilize people who are suffering because their sons have been killed, and they're willing to scapegoat Bergdorf without any concern for the truth of it and what that will do to the families when they realize the truth. I go back to when I was in the Pentagon. I worked for the Secretary of the Navy prior to and during the beginning of the Iraq War, and there was a pilot who had been shot down, a Navy pilot named Michael Spiker, who had been shot down in the war in 1990-1991, and he had been, his remains had never been found. And in 2002, early 2003, the Department of Defense started this bogus story that Spiker was still alive, that Spiker was being held in an Iraqi prison, what to gen up hatred and vehemence and a willingness to go to war against Iraq. They willingly and knowingly lied about this, not caring at all what was going to happen to that family because of that lie. So you have this family of this pilot who's been missing and presumed dead for over a decade, and the Department of Defense just willingly
throws out this false hope and false nightmare.
Exactly.
Well, you know, when you go in the military, you become their property.
Well, you do.
And they can do whatever they want with whatever you've got.
Yeah, and there's a conditioning process. Why do we spend $2 to $3 million per recruit now who go into the Army infantry or the Marine Corps infantry to train them?
Oh, just give them the money and let them buy a house here at home and get a job. For gosh sakes.
But you have to condition these people. You have to condition these young men and women to do your bidding, to do the killing, to become these machines. You know, I mean, I'm thinking now of the great Charlie Chaplin film, The Great Dictator.
Yeah.
You know, and he speaks about this, you know, about machine men with machine hearts and machine minds. And that's what they want you to become. And so we spend, as a nation, we spend $2 million on each recruit. And we send them to almost a year's worth of training before they go to their unit to condition them and change them and rewire them so that they will do things like you were describing about your brother, take part in the beating of a scapegoat. And also, too, it just doesn't happen on a scapegoating end. We see it, and we've seen it throughout these wars in the various stories of heroism that have since been disproved as fraudulent, whether it be, say, Pat Tillman, the football player.
Yes, I was thinking of that. His parents still so angry for being told lies about how he died when it was friendly fire.
Yeah, you could see that with Marcus Luttrell, who was the SEAL that Mark Wahlberg played in the movie. His story is nearly completely fictitious. The only true story about that was that his fellow SEAL members were killed and that a Afghan villager saved him. Other than that, there was no firefight, and Luttrell admitted this finally on CNN a number of years ago, but the Pentagon, knowing this, willingly goes along and helps fund a major motion picture. Jessica Lynch, if we remember her from the beginning of the Iraq War, so they're willing to completely utilize individuals for their own purposes of not just furthering the war, but of engendering this popular support and this public relations. And I'm thinking now of...
Well,
say,
Matthew, we're going to have to let it go. I am I am so appreciative that that we got to talk with you and
it's
talk
been
about
so
this
good
subject.
To have you on.
It's
yes.
been really great. I want to thank Ray, our engineer, and all of our listeners.
And the callers we did
And the callers we didn't get to, well, they can call again next week, which will be our Buy Nothing Friday show, which is always fun. But Matthew, thank you so much.
Hey,
and,
thank you,
and
guys.
Keep,
I really appreciate
keep writing.
It.
Keep doing what
yeah,
you're doing.
Yeah, we really appreciate your
thank
work.
You. I appreciate you all. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. All right. Well, we will, like I said, see you next week for our Buy Nothing Friday show. And thanks. Continue to be positively revolting.
you cast your vote.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The events committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Fixed Fair, Saturday, November 18th at 9:30 a.m. at Ron Russell Middle School in Portland. The Portland Fixed Fair is a free event featuring exhibits and workshops from numerous community partners throughout the day. Experts will be able to talk about water and energy, savings, home and personal health, food and nutrition, community resources.